This is the Cascade Hiker Podcast. You're going to find out all the aspects of hiking in our beautiful Pacific Northwest woods.
I'm a country boy with a soft side. My heart wanders up north to the hillside. And I've never met anyone quite as beautiful as you.
Check us out over at CascadeHikerPodcast.com. That's right, CascadeHikerPodcast.com. That's where you're going to find all the show notes and links right there.
Enigmatic like that of the cosmos. Never held your hand.
I want to thank Whiskey Fever for letting me use that awesome track there. That was Tall Grass off their album, Gonna Wake Up This Whole Town. Find them at ReverbNation.com/Whiskey Fever. They're from Cedro Woolley. Go check them out. I'm your host, Rudy Getzik. I put this podcast together to inspire you to get out on the trail. Are you putting in 2-mile hikes, 5-mile hikes? Are you sitting on the couch? Have you even gone on a backpacking trip yet? I'm going to introduce you to some folks that have done that and a whole lot more. So without further ado, here is the Cascade Hiker Podcast. All right, the next guest on the Cascade Hiker Podcast. What's your name and where are you from?
So I'm Jim Miller, and I live on Capitol Hill in Seattle. And I, except for 10 years in Alaska and Oregon, I've always lived on Capitol Hill.
All right. So I met you doing some PCTA trail work. So how long have you been doing that for?
I've been doing this since 2010 for the PCTA.
And then from what I understand, you're kind of been with the North 350 Blades group of the PCTA kind of since its inception, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I went on, my wife and I, Donna and I, went to a PCTA presentation at REI in 2010. And they made this presentation about trail work, and then they had put together a work party, the woman, this Suzanne Wilson, who was the PCTA person, and Barry Teschlag had put together a work party up by Snoqualmie Pass. And so Don and I went, and Barry and I got talking about we need to form, you know, he'd like to form a group. And I said, hey, I'm in, you know, I'm looking for something to do. And actually,
did you know him before that?
No, I did not know him before that.
Okay.
And I really didn't. I think I may have met him at that meeting, but I don't know. But we got to talking at that work party, and we went up to Windy Pass, and we worked just north of Windy Pass on some tread. And
in the woods there?
In the woods, yeah. Yeah, down towards a Lolly Meadow, just north of a Lolly Meadows.
Oh, yeah.
And so anyways, we got together after that, and he wanted, you know, and I said, well, let's make up a group. And he had a bunch of email addresses on his personal phone. And I said, well, you know, that's not going to work. And so I set up a Gmail account, and then he transferred all those addresses on there. And we went from, I don't know how many he had, 50 maybe. And we have like 450 names now.
Wow.
And then Barry wanted, in the name, he wanted North 350. He had that in his head. And it was North 350 Trail Crew or just whatever. And I'm like going, you know, everything's named a trail crew. And so I thought about it a long time, and I came up with the name Blades. Because everything we have is a blade, has a blade on it.
That's great.
All our tools have blades, and so I think we have a pretty unique name.
Yeah, and the 350, that's representative of the miles that you guys.
Yeah, it's supposedly the miles from White Pass to the border.
Okay.
Approximately, although since this group formed, the PCTA formed a group in Yakima around White Pass, and it's called the White Pass Chapter, and they're supposed to work north and south of White Pass, but we're not going to quibble about that kind of stuff.
Well, they don't have quite the cool name that you came up with.
No, they don't. No.
Well, hey, I've been happy to work with you on quite a few trips, man. It's been great. But one of the things we kind of talked about on, at least we got really extensive when I did a 4-day trip with you out of the Crystal Mountain area there. You sounds like you've been hiking for years, man. You have some great stories. So what? What's some of your favorite spots to hike up there?
Wow. Well, I sort of got started hiking. I'm going to be a politician.
Right. Yeah.
I got started hiking when I was in Boy Scouts, and my father was my father had three sons, and I'm the middle one, and all three of us were in my father's scout troop, and I think we ultimately disappointed him no end because none of us became Eagle Scouts. and he was an Eagle Scout, and he was really proud of that. But there used to be, weekend hikes, and then there was a guy that my father never took us on any week-long hikes, but he would get some, I guess, younger guys, we would say, to take us on week hikes. And there was trips in the Olympics up north of Gold Creek.
Oh yeah.
Up to Alaska Lake and places like that. And one of my memorable early trips was a Boy Scout trip where we went up over I think it was Anderson. We went up the Dosey Wallops River and we went over and dropped down into the Elwha. And then we went up the Elwha to Chicago Camp. And then you go up and there's the Elwha Snowfinger, which I was up there about 10 or 12 years ago, and it's basically gone. But we went up the Snowfinger and camped up at Doddle-Rickson Pass. And we were going to go. The idea was to go over the shoulder of Mount Olympus and hike out the whole river. We got up to Doddle-Rickson Pass, and the fog came in. And nobody could see where to go. We couldn't see where to go. Hmm. And this is all cross country. There's no trail up there. And so my longest night ever in a shelter was up there. And we'd taken we carried Visqueen tarps. And we had a Visqueen tarp under us. And we had one that we'd sort of hung off of this big rock. And so it was like a lean-to with the high side was this rock. And we're inside there. And I remember, and there was like, I don't know, three or four of us in there. And there was one guy that had an air mattress and all the rest of us were toughing it. And I can remember laying on my back and putting my hands underneath my butt and putting a little weight on it and getting water between my fingers. And it was like, that's how wet my sleeping bag was.
Oh, man.
And in the morning, we packed up everything and we went back the way we came, except that we went out the Elwha River.
Oh, okay.
And some people rushed ahead to make a phone call to be picked up at the Elwha instead of on the Ho. That was probably my most awful night out ever.
Man, I could bet.
And this is back when Dacron sleeping bags.
Yeah. What year do you think that was, roughly?
I suspect it was like 1958, 59, right in there.
That must have been a pretty popular hike, the Dosey Wallops. I talked to my mom. She grew up in Edmonds, and I did a little interview with her, and she mentioned that was a very popular hike for them to do. It was the Dosey Wallops and all through the Olympics.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and then there's a cross-Olympics hike that I've actually never did it in one chunk, but people would go up the Elwha and out the Quinault.
Okay, yeah, that she talked about that one.
That's a classic 50-mile Boy Scout hike, which is what, but it's not quite 50 miles, I understand.
They count. So, they checked it off their list, though. Huh?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then a couple of years ago, 10 or 12 years ago, Donna and I went up, it's probably 10 years ago, we went up the Dosey, and we got involved in the Olympic National Park is monitoring the location of marmots in the park.
Okay.
And every year, I think they're still doing it, they would send out teams of people and into different areas. They'd give you these sections and you'd walk around in these meadows. And when you found a marmot, you would get its GPS coordinates and you'd mark it in the GPS device list. Plus they also wanted you to write them down. And I think they were concerned that nobody really knew what we were doing. but we'd wander around on these hillsides and find these marmots or evidence of where there used to be marmots. And it was really fun.
That sounds really cool.
It was a really cool treasure hunt. And so it was good. And I know one night we were up above Dosey Meadows on, I can't remember the trail, but I was up getting water out of the creek, and we had camped up in the meadow instead of actually where we were supposed to, because where we were supposed to was like a wide spot on the trail. And that doesn't make it for me. So I just got out of sight.
Yeah.
And I was over at the creek getting some water right at dusk. And there was a guy came down the trail and he had a dog. And we had a Forest Service, we had a Park Service radio, and we had to call in every morning and night. And so in the morning when I called in, I reported this dog, and this guy with his dog, and the person, the ranger, whoever it was, the dispatcher wanted to know a description of the person. And I remember saying, "Well, it's the person with the dog."
Yeah, can't miss him.
You know, it's like. Because anyways, I didn't see him really other than just this person. So, yeah.
Wow.
Well, yeah.
That sounds like a really cool thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And then another cool hike I took in the sort of with my older brother and a couple guys, we went to Stevens Pass like in 1961. And we went north on the PCT. And we went by Lake Sally Ann, and then we dropped at Dishpan Gap. You dropped down to the North Fork of the Sauk.
Yeah.
And we went down. This was a week trip. And there was the first night out, we had my grandparents drop us off at Stevens Pass, and it was in the afternoon. And we hiked on the trail, and we got down there someplace, and it got dark. And so we camped right in the middle of the trail. and it was the summertime, so we just laid our sleeping bags down end to end. And there was 3 or 4 of us. And my brother, he got concerned about somebody coming along and stepping on us. So he put a rope across the trail on each end. and nobody came along. It wasn't a problem. But up by Lake Sally Ann, there was a dead horse, I remember. And then I think we were out like 6 days.
Wow. How many people do you think you saw?
You know, not very many.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so.
Yeah, not very many. And then we came and we were getting late coming out, and my parents were picking us up at the North Fork of the Sauk at the place that's a trailhead right now, I think. And we came down there to the Sauk River, whatever it is, and it was dark. We'd come down all these switchbacks, and in the dark, and we got down there and there's this creek. It's a pretty good sized creek. And it was like, you know, we had to get across, and we didn't want to have my parents be worried too much. And so my brother said, well, let's just wade this, you know, let's go. And so we took off our shoes and tied them on our packs, and we started to cross, and we're using flashlights, and we cut out in there, and we shined the flashlight downstream, and we were crossing right next to a foot log.
So, oh, man.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway.
That's a good story. A good trip.
Yeah, yeah.
So you think you came down the Pilot Ridge Trail then?
Yeah, it was the Pilot Ridge.
Oh, okay. So you were actually crossing the Sauk then.
Was that the Sauk?
Must have been, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I just remember a gob of switchbacks.
Oh, yeah.
They just went on forever.
Those are still there.
Yeah, are they?
Yeah. Well, you mentioned going up out of Dosey Wallops and kind of just cross country. And you had talked about doing a lot of that around Glacier Peak too, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I did on the year that I turned 40, for my summer, we used to do these week hikes for my birthday. Well, my birthday is August 1st. And we went up the Suyato River and we went across on the old, there was a bridge washed out in 2003, which on the PCT, the big PCT bridge.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And we went across that and then we went to the there's a trail that goes up the Suyato and then it stops and there's a side trail up to Gamma Ridge.
Oh, okay.
And then it goes to Chocolate Creek. And it shows the trail on the map we had showed it went up there further, but anyways, we crossed Chocolate Creek and then we went up on the south bank of Chocolate Creek. And Chocolate Creek's in this really deep canyon, actually. And we got up there in the meadows, and this one woman that was with us, she got sort of freaked out. It wasn't her cup of tea. so we decided we wouldn't try to. We were going to go around the mountain. We were going to come out by Kennedy Hot Springs.
Oh yeah.
We were going to go over to the White Chuck and go down. And so we turned around and went back out to Suyato River because this woman, we weren't getting anywhere. She was so freaked out when we started cross country and in these meadows because it's, you know, meadows look pretty, but they're not that easy sometimes.
Yeah, there's a lot of steep hillsides. There's all these little
hidden, steep hillsides and stuff. And so anyways, the following year, my younger brother and I, we went up there and we went around the mountain and came out at Kennedy. And that was a good trip. It's really pretty on the south side of Glacier Peak.
It's amazing they haven't ever put any trails in over there.
Like
designated trail, you know?
Yeah, right. On the south side of Chocolate Creek, it looked like there was some switchbacks up there. But I don't know if, you know, it was animals or whatever, but they sort of looked like they'd been constructed, but that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
That's 31 years ago.
that was a few years.
Yeah.
What about, you mentioned all your work with the PCT, PCTA. Have you done much of the PCT itself?
Inadvertently, my wife and I, let me start over again. We inadvertently started on the PCT in like 1983 when my wife and I hiked from Stevens Pass to Snoqualmie Pass. And then I had done that section north of Stevens Pass, which I guess was earlier. That was really inadvertent. I didn't even think about that. and then in the middle 80s, we got these two women to drop me and my wife and three other people off in Manning Park in Canada.
Yeah.
And we hiked south on the PCT to Rainy Pass. And back in those days, you didn't need, you know, there was no problem. You just walked across the border. so we did that. And we did those all as week hikes with like 70-pound packs. And now you see the through hikers, they do those things in 3 days.
Yeah, 13-pound packs.
yeah. And then starting in 2011, my wife and I went down to the southern border, and we were going to through hike. And I made it, she made it 150 miles that year, and her knees gave up. So she flew home from Palm Springs, and I hiked 700 miles and came out at Lone Pine, California. And then the next year we came back and we started south of Lone Pine a little ways. And we went up and we got up in the middle of the Sierras and we were hiking with two other people. One morning she woke up and she says, you know, my ankle's bruised. And, you know, sure enough, it was all black and blue and we're up by Muir Pass. And so I took some of her stuff and we limped up the hill and Linda and Larry had gone out ahead of us, and which had been our usual routine. They would start and then we would catch up with them kind of. And they've had to wait for us a really long time because Donna was really hobbling along. And after, what, three days, we hobbled into Muir Ranch. It took us 3 days to go 25 miles. And we got in there and they had a truck going to town. And so she had to get on this truck and leave. It was sort of like the sore knee thing of the year before. And then a couple of days later, I was up at Vermilion Valley Ranch or Resort. And I got an email from her saying that she'd just left the hospital in San Francisco with her sister with her broken leg.
Broken leg. Wow.
Yeah. And so anyways, this Larry guy I actually hiked with him for 3 years. And he said, I showed him the email on my phone and he said, so Jim, what are you going to do? And I said, well, Larry, I just don't know. And he looked at me and he said, well, Jim, if that was my wife, I'd go home. but we had this little problem of we had driven to Kennedy Meadows and left our car, Kennedy Meadows South. And we'd left our car. And so Larry and I had to hike to Mammoth Lakes and then get back to Kennedy Meadows to get my car.
Yeah.
And it took me, from the time I got her message, it took me like 5 days to get home. Because it's actually a long drive back to Seattle from down there.
Oh, sure.
So, yeah.
And so, awkward.
Yeah, yeah. And then, so anyways, in 2014, at the end of my fourth year of being a thru-hiker with many 0 days, I got off the trail at Interstate 5 in Castilla, California, Mount Shasta.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, so I've done over half. Man, and I've still got like 300 miles in California to do. California is like 1,800 miles.
Yeah, it's a big chunk.
1,750 or 1,800 something. So, and last year, Don and I went up and we hiked. We went up to High Bridge, Stehekin, and we hiked south on the board, south on the PCT to Suiata Pass. And then we hiked back to High Bridge and we were out at like 3 nights. And then we went into Stehekin and stayed in a hotel. And then we took the bus back out to High Bridge. And then we hiked north on the PCT 5 miles to Bridge Creek. And then we hiked back and got back on the bus and went back to the hotel. And that completed the PCT from Snoqualmie Pass to the border.
Oh, that's great.
Which we'd started in 1983.
So, well, that little chunk, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So,
well, I'll be doing some of that this year. I plan on doing Highway 20 North.
Uh-huh.
I still haven't done that section, so.
Uh-huh. You going to hike into Canada?
No, I'm going to drive into Hart's Pass and do a loop, yo-yo to the border and back. And then, and then later or earlier in the year, I plan on getting dropped off at Hart's Pass and just trucking down to Highway 20. So,
oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
That's the plan. But, you know, I had one question for you. It sounds like you've done a ton of the PCT, almost half. I did interview a guy named Hadley for the podcast here, and he's planning on going down to the kickoff this year. Do you have any words of wisdom for him?
Be prepared for a lot of people.
Yeah.
We went to the kickoff in 2010 because we wanted to go look they have a lot of lightweight equipment for sale there.
Like and you can
like, yeah, tents and lightweight backpacks. You can see all kinds of things that you're not going to see at REI. And so we went down and we looked at this gear and we ended up buying packs and a Six Moon design shelter thing. And plus I got our head around the desert down there. And when in 2010 for the kickoff, we actually flew to San Diego and rented a car. And we drove up there and we were going to camp up. We couldn't camp at the kickoff because it's for the hikers. And we were going to camp at this other place up on Mount Laguna. And there was like a foot of snow up there.
Oh, man.
And it blew my mind. I never thought of mountains way down there.
Yeah.
With snow. It was off my radar. And so it really woke me up to the fact that they have some pretty big mountains.
Yeah, you kind of think maybe you could do that even in the wintertime without running snow, but
it's not true.
So did you guys happen to do the go down to the border then when you were there?
Yeah, we went down to the border and, you know, stood there and looked at it. And and we went to, there's a railroad museum in Campo. We went to the railroad museum, which was kind of fun. And so, yeah.
Did you see anybody hop? Was anybody hopping the fence down there when you went?
Yeah. No, I don't think. No. I don't know how anybody could hop that fence.
No.
And then with all the Border Patrol people around, it's like crazy. I'm impressed with how many people seem to come across.
Right.
With all the security we have. So anyway.
Hey, something really easy to do. If you shop at REI, you can click right through my site. It gives a little kickback to me and helps the show out. Gets the show a little credit there. You get all the same prices that REI offers, but I get a little kickback. So thanks a lot. We also do the Amazon. If you shop at Amazon and you want to click through the website, same thing. You get all the same deals. Click through. Just go to the show notes. Check that out. Hey, thanks a lot for supporting the show. In all your years of hiking, what's your favorite day hike?
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's an interesting question.
Well, you've done a lot of overnights. I'm sure you're backpacking a lot of stories.
Yeah. We had a few years ago, we had a good time just going up to Gothic Basin.
Oh, yeah.
And then we did another day trip. We went and walked up the road to Monte Cristo.
Yeah.
And then we went up to Silver Lake.
That's a good spot too.
And Silver Lake was someplace that the Boy Scouts used to go to. And when we went to Silver Lake, we would drive to Monte Cristo.
To town when it was open still, yeah. To
town, and there was a store there.
Oh, man.
There was a store. And, you know, you could get some pop and stuff like that. So, you still there?
Yeah, it's weird to see those. Yeah. It's weird to see those old pictures of the town, and you think, man, that wasn't really that long ago, and you just really can't tell. Like, you can't tell when you're there.
No. They say that what they were mining up there was East Coast investors. Yeah,
that's good. Well, so what about all? I mean, man, you just listed a ton of hikes as far as backpacking goes. Well, do you have a favorite one, or?
You know what? I'd like to go. I sort of missed over that a couple of years ago. Don and I went to Stevens Pass, and we hiked up and came out at Holden Village.
Yeah.
And I really like hiking up around Glacier Peak, and that's why I wanted to go last summer with you up there to work on the trail.
Yeah, White Pass, yeah.
Yeah, because I really like it up there.
Man, it's just such a great place.
It's that, and then down the valley into the White Chuck River.
Yeah.
And then up over to Milk Creek Pass, Fire Creek Pass, rather.
Yeah, Fire Creek.
Micah
Lake. And.
Yeah, I'm not so wild about walking down and back out of Milk Creek, but.
No, that's kind of nasty.
It's all right, you know.
Yeah, I just did that section last year, and man, it was a lot of up and down in that little spot there.
Yeah. It's
beautiful, though.
Yeah. So,
other than putting up the ropes on the trail with your brother, what was the, do you have like a scariest trip moment? Something happened where you're pretty scared out there?
I don't recall ever being really scared. I remember I've been really like cold and wet.
Yeah.
And this isn't so cool.
No, that can be scary in itself. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I also think that young males are kind of stupid. So.
So you're talking about the 50s again now?
Yeah. No, I don't. I can't think of anything being really scared.
Right.
No. I one thing that irritates me hiking is when I get with some people that sort of aren't ready, or their head's not ready about like bad weather.
Oh yeah.
You know, there's sometimes you just need to put up, you know, I mean, you have to put up with it, and complaining about it's not going to change anything, you know, except make it harder on the other people.
Yeah. It's annoying. Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah. So.
All right. Well, do you normally carry 10 essentials when you go out?
You know, I used to carry a gob of 10 essentials. I mean, like heavy 10 essentials.
30 you essentials? Know,
like a, yeah, well, you know, like double extra clothes and a first aid kit that I could probably do surgery with and that kind of stuff. And then since 2011, the first aid kit has gotten down to like an ace bandage and a couple of bandages. And I carry a pair of scissors. And I carry a really small knife. And I actually, on the PCT, I carried a compass and plus my smartphone, but I never used the GPS on the smartphone. And I had a crappy little map set that came with, there's a guy named Eric the Black that sold these guides. And it's a pretty cool little book, except it's full of inaccuracies.
Oh, really?
And it's got these maps that give you a general idea what's going on, but you have no idea what's off to the side of the trail very far.
Yeah, I've seen some. I've got the what's the other person has the maps?
Yeah,
I've got the other ones. A half mile.
Oh, half mile. Yeah.
Yeah, and I've got those maps, and it's kind of scary if that's all you got, and you can't really, if you get off trail, you're pretty much lost.
Right. And then I've seen people with a whole set of half mile maps, and I've hardly ever looked at a map on the trail. You know, there's signs, you know, you need to pay attention. And there's only one time where we got sort of screwed up. You know, I was hiking with this guy and I was sort of following him, and he missed a turn, and we got up there a little ways. It was just past the Mojave Desert. We got a little ways and we just went, you know, this isn't right. And we sat down and we figured out the trail's got to be over that way and off to the west. And we went that way and bumped into it. But it was just, you're just walking out in the desert. So it's like you can see a long ways. And so.
Pretty obvious when you hit the trail.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you see people with GPSs around their neck, which drives me crazy. It drives me crazy. They come up to a trail junction. There's signs there, and they look at their GPS. And I don't get it.
Well, you know, I was the year before last I did, I pieced together Snoqualmie south to White Pass. And when I was doing Chinook to Tacoma Pass, and I just had gotten on the trail, I was dropped off. And this guy, it was right before I got to, is it Goat Lake right there?
Yeah.
I think so. And I mean, I was just barely on the trail, but there still hadn't been any signs. There was no signs except for this is the PCT from the parking lot. And then once I got on the trail, there was no markings. So I got to this to the lake, and I knew I was supposed to be getting to a lake. And this guy said, oh, are you trying to get to the PCT? And I said, yeah. And he had just been camping at the lake, and he says, well, oh man, I don't know if this trail leads that way. This is the Goat Lake Trail. And I was so scared. I was like, oh man. And you know, cause I'd been dropped off there, and I'm like, well, crap, I don't know where I'm going. So I did pull out the GPS then, and it was mainly just cause a human person scared me more than anything.
Right.
So,
right.
But yeah. Right. I was on track. He didn't know what he's talking about.
Yeah. 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 You know, you talked about being scared. And I just thought of something.
Yeah.
And it had to do with people. and we went, I hate to think about it being 20 years ago. But some of us went up the middle fork of the Snoqualmie River before they closed the road.
Right.
And 2 years in a row, I went up there. And this one trip, we went up and we went up to Dutch Miller Gap and dropped over and went down to Wapitis Lake. And then you can go up to a place called Spade Lake.
Okay.
Up above Wapitis Lake. And it's got this trail has this real bad reputation, but I didn't think it was so bad. And we camped up in there. And then the storm came in, so we dropped back down to Wapitis Lake. And then we were going back up to Dutch Miller Gap. And I think it's Ivanhoe Lake up there. And it's actually the way the PCT used to go.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, because it used to come over Snow Lake. Then drop down to Goldmeyer Hot Springs, then go up the Middle Fork, Snoqualmie, and then over Dutch. But anyway, we were up there by Ivanhoe Lake, and there was these, obviously some hunters, because there was all this gunfire. I mean, it was like a war.
Oh, man.
And you know, there was like, you know, 10 or 12 shots, and it just echoed around in this valley. And that was okay in itself, and we didn't have any idea if it was hunting or not. But then a couple hours later, we were camped there at Ivanhoe Lake, and these guys came out of the woods, and they didn't look like you wanted to be very friendly with them, or like they might not be friendly with you.
And these are obviously guys.
They were the hunters.
Okay,
they were the hunters, and they had these backpacks that were just bleeding blood, you know, because they butchered whatever they shot, and. And they came by and they were pretty scary looking guys.
Hmm.
And it just, you know, they were real scruffy. They were like survivalists. I think we'd call them survivalists now. And I suspect that they existed back then.
Wow.
But it was like, they were the kind of guys that, you know, if they didn't like you being there, you might disappear.
Yep.
Yeah. So anyway,
I can see how that'd be real scary. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially reflecting on it in the moment. You're just So you kind of said that down there at the PCT kickoff that you kind of updated some of your gear.
And yeah.
You mentioned some of that, but what about like your sleeping bag and your pad? What do you use for that?
We use some Therm-a-Rest 3/4 length women's pads. They're like 1.5 inches.
Okay.
They're 3/4 length, and they call them a woman's, and it's actually sort of shaped like a woman. So maybe that's why I like it. But, and we switched. We were going to take we had this double sleeping bag, which would have been a real mistake. And we started going out to Pro Mountain Sports in the University District. In Seattle University District,
okay.
Out by Ravenna. And this guy, he specializes in mountaineering equipment and lightweight equipment. And we got in there and we had these synthetic jackets that we were going to take, and we'd bought them, and they're mountain hardware jackets. And we said we were going to take these jackets. And he said, right in the middle of his story has this scale hanging up, like a big, grocery scale, like you used to have in the grocery stores.
Yeah.
You hang up something or put it in the big bucket and,
kind of like a fish,
yeah.
Scale.
And anyway, so we hung these jackets up there on this hook and they were like a pound. And he said, grab those over here. Some, they were either mountain hardware. No, not mountain hardware. Western Mountaineering.
Oh, yeah.
And, or Mont Bell. I think we ended up with Mount Bells. But anyways, there was these really nice down jackets. And we hung those up, and they're like less than half of what these other ones were weight-wise. So we bought those jackets. And then he got to talking about sleeping bags, and we brought this double sleeping bag that we were going to carry because, you know, a double sleeping bag is – it was like a big quilt, and then the air mattresses slip in the sleeve.
Oh, okay.
Underneath, and we were going to take that. And he said, bring that bag in here. I said, I can beat that weight. And so anyways, he ended up with these Western Mountaineering down bags that, Donna's is a short bag and mine's a long bag, but yet you can still zip them together if you want.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Although when you're doing a lot of long distance hiking, you don't do that because you're also dirty. And, you know, it's just like you just get in your own bag. But these bags were like the jackets. It was like less than half of the weight. And so that guy, he probably got, I don't know, $1,000, $1,500 of our money saving us weight.
That's a smart guy.
And we still have all this stuff. And it's really good equipment. And we bought silk sleeping bag liners.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I really like them, although they're really fragile. You get them wrapped up on you, you can bust the seams on them. but they're really good, you know, when you're traveling day after day and you're really dirty and it just sort of keeps your bag a little cleaner.
That's a good idea.
And it's easy to wash. You get a day off at a motel and you can wash that liner and hang it over a door and it's dry in, you know, half an hour.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. So I really like that.
Wow. What about your pack itself?
And we bought these. I'm going to lock my head up here.
That's all right.
I can't think of what they are. Then we bought these packs I'll think of it after we get off the phone.
Right.
yeah.
That's all right.
We bought these packs at the kickoff.
Oh, yeah.
Down there. You can look up the kickoff online. It's the 80 annual 0 day PCT kickoff. And that's all the initials of that. But they have all these vendors that advertise. But anyways, I can't think of the name of the pack.
That's all right.
Well, but it was like I'd been carrying like an 8-pound, 7,200 cubic inch Big Agnes pack. And this new pack is like under 3 pounds.
Huh.
And it doesn't carry as much stuff. And it doesn't carry over 35 pounds very well. But you're not carrying this extra 5 pounds around all the time.
Yeah, that's a big cut.
Yeah. So, yeah. And then we bought Six Moon Design tarp tents.
Is that the one I've seen you at the PCTA sleepovers with?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that I have.
That's nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I've actually got rid of the original one we got, and then I got a solo, and then another, and then a double, a Lunar Duo and a Lunar Solo, that I've actually bought them used from different people, and now they're making those things in like Cuban fiber. It's like half of what. The weight of what I've got, which are just sil nylon. But I'm not going to spend that kind of money anymore. They're like $600 to save a pound.
Right.
You know. So, yeah. Yeah. And my clothes that I like are Rail Riders.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Really, really like Rail Rider clothing.
I've heard that they last forever, too. Is that true?
They do.
Yeah.
I have the same pair of pants that I've worn all the way through California. One knee's torn out because I tripped and ripped it out, you know, but the Rail Riders are great. Absolutely.
Rail Riders, that's originally a sailboat company or something.
You know, I have no idea.
Yeah. I think it's like just sitting on the rail for, you know, like sailing.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, they got into the outdoor stuff too, because it's compatible.
Yeah, you know what? And in their catalog, they show a lot of people on sailboats. So you're right.
That makes sense now.
Yeah. So, yeah.
That's good. And you have their shirts and their pants in?
I got some microfiber underwear that I wear.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't carry any shorts, like hiking shorts. Mm-hmm. If I want shorts, I just work in my underwear. They're like mid-thigh kind of stuff.
Well, a lot of people probably laugh at that, but you know what? You're out on the trail. What does it matter anyway?
I know. And nobody gives a shit.
What about your rain gear?
I carry a poncho.
Does that cover your pack too?
Yep. It covers it all up. I got a Sil Nylon poncho, and I've worn ponchos in Boy Scouts, and I'm a total cynic about Gore-Tex, although I've got a really nice Gore-Tex jacket, but when you're backpacking and your pack straps, it starts to leak around those, and I like the poncho.
And are you the type to bag all your stuff inside your pack too? Do you do like a liner or anything in there?
Nope. The poncho does it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't really like pack covers because the water collects in the bottom of them. If it's really raining.
Yeah.
You know, and so everything at the bottom gets wet. So no, I just put the poncho on, and I had to put the poncho on one day by myself. You know, when my wife was with me, when Donna could pull it over my pack, it's a different deal. It's a different deal to get it on or to get your backpack up underneath it or to put it on over the backpack. It's really hard to flip over your pack. I couldn't believe how hard it was. And it's quite a deal.
Go-Go Gadget arm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So what about an umbrella?
No umbrella.
Have you hiked with anybody that does?
I've seen people with them. People down in the desert were using umbrellas, and there's something to be said for them. Yeah. But no, I've never hiked really with anybody that uses them.
Yeah. I don't know if you know Arthur Wright, but he carries one from time to time.
Yeah. Yeah. I know Arthur.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm getting too cheap to buy one.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah.
So what about your future with hiking? Do you still have any goals or places you want to get back to or places you haven't been that you want to check out?
Well, I keep thinking I should go back and do another big chunk on the PCT.
Down south, yeah?
Yeah, I'd go back to California and pick up at I-5 and go to Ashland or something.
Yeah.
Which would probably be three and a half weeks. Cause I wouldn't be in very good shape when I started.
Yeah.
I'm a really big fan, and the longer the hike, the better. Cause you suffer the first week, you know, somewhat. Yeah. You're not really in trail shape, but then once you get into the routine and your body gets into it, it's really pretty easy.
Don't give up right when you're just getting started, huh?
Don't give up when that's good. Yeah. 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 Particularly don't give up in the first week.
Well, some people do, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. There was people hiking from the border to Campo or to where the kickoff is at Lake Marino that quit there. That was 20 miles.
Oh man.
They quit, and it was anyway.
Wow. Well, you know, yeah. that's find out what you're made of real quick.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what about leave no trace? What does that mean to you?
You know what? Take all your garbage. Don't be building fires. I don't build fires.
Right.
I sort of quit. I mean, I'll have a fire if I'm in a car campground or something, but no fires. And I was impressed with the number of people in California who were having fires. And even when the woods were closed, you know, young people having fires, and some of that wood down there was so dry, you could probably just throw a match in the woods and it'd go up. And
that's crazy.
So, yeah. And I sort of like to do my business away from camp spots. Like after you start hiking, then go back in the woods.
Yeah.
You know, just get away from where people concentrate. And so that's sort of leave no trace for me.
Yeah.
But yeah. But and then this long distance hiking has also introduced me to the fact that there's gobs of places for one or two people to camp.
When you really open your eyes to it.
Yeah. There's lots of places where you can lay down and go to sleep. And, you know, you might not be able to get your shelter up, but you can lay down and sleep. And I'm a cowboy camper. If the bugs aren't too bad and if it's not raining, and I've hardly, I got caught once a couple of years ago on a North 350 Blades work party. It was a car camping thing up on some obscure logging road. And everybody's looking at their cell phones, and there's all these, the weather radar things, and there's all these thunder cells coming through, and everybody's like, they're putting up shelters. And it was like, no, I'm not gonna, cause I looked out to the west and there's nothing out there.
Yeah.
About 1 o'clock, the lightning fired up and, but I was like right next to my truck.
Oh yeah.
But my little Ranger pickup's pretty small. And so I sat up the rest of the night, you know, got in there and put my sleeping bag over me, and I actually slept. But anyways, it's one of those nights when I wished I'd put it up. But
sometimes you gotta make do.
Yeah.
What about dogs? Have you guys ever hiked with dogs?
No, I haven't owned a dog since my family had one when I was five.
What do you think about dogs out there on the trails?
You know, if dogs stay away from me, I'm fine. And stay out of my stuff. I get really concerned that a dog is going to come up and pick up his leg and pee on my pack or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have that concern because there's enough people that let them sort of wander around. And
you don't know what the dog's going to do.
I don't know what a dog's going to do.
Yeah.
And I'm real happy with dogs on leashes, you know, or dogs that are, you know, there's some dogs that are really well trained.
Right.
And the owners are well trained. And that's fine with me. But it's sort of like, keep your dog with you.
Well, it sounds like where you're hiking anyway, I mean, you're not going to run into these people in flip-flops with the dog running around. So.
No.
What about cameras? Do you carry a camera at all, or your phone, or what do you do for that?
We used to carry a Leica camera with a couple lenses. And then I went to a little point and shoot, and then because with my first phone I had, the camera on it really sucked.
Oh yeah.
And then the little Nikon point and shoot cameras were pretty good, and you know, just for scenery stuff and some pictures of people, and then when I got this phone that I have now, I got rid of the point and shoot.
Do you know how to this work phone, your phone?
Well, you know better now. You know I thought. But you know, I've learned some of those things you were showing me.
Oh yeah.
About that. And I think Android has changed their settings. I mean the app.
Right.
Because you can do more stuff. You can do stuff like you were showing me last summer.
Some editing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. So but I pretty much just point and shoot.
Oh, that's good.
And then I like to crop pictures.
Yeah, cut out some of the garbage.
Get rid of the garbage. If you got pictures of people, make it a picture of the people and not all the scenery behind them.
Well, I forgot to ask, what kind of stove do you carry?
I've been using tri-tie cone, which is a titanium alcohol stove.
Oh yeah.
And it's got this cone, titanium cone, that the pot sits in this cone and the little alcohol burners inside of that. And so all the heat goes to the pan.
Nice.
And you also can build a wood fire in there if you want. And a wood fire is way hotter than the alcohol, but it's really messy.
Is it harder to light too?
Well, you got all this soot on everything, and so it's not the first choice. And then, like, the last summer I was on the PCT in 2014, they'd closed the woods to those kind of stoves. You had to have a shutoff valve on your stove.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah, but Larry and I just sort of went poop on that. So we don't follow all regulations.
Right.
Huh. But...
Oh, that's cool. I haven't hiked with too many people that have that kind of stove. Of course, more on those backcountry PCTA trips, they usually pack in a nice propane cooking unit and stuff. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. That was actually a pretty good camp up there.
That was nice. Yeah, those old cowboys wanted us to light a fire, though, didn't they?
So.
Well,
so you got a question on here about food.
Yeah, what do you normally eat?
So we've gotten into buying stuff from a place called Packet Gourmet.
I remember you talking about that, yeah.
It's really good stuff. And it costs dearly, but it's really, really, and it creates a lot of garbage because you make it in the bags. It's like hot water added in the bag. You stir it up in the bag. And so you have a lot of garbage, but the garbage is lighter than the food. and a lot of their stuff goes with tortillas, which I really like, flour tortillas. And I made a mistake once. I got some corn tortillas.
Yeah, they broke up on me.
They were like white corn, so it looked like flour, and they broke all the hell.
Yeah, if you don't heat those up, they break up.
Yeah, it was a disaster. So, yeah, I ended up like pouring them into the food, mixing it up in the food.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. I'll put a link in the show notes on this episode for that, so people can kind of check that out.
That's
cool.
And they have Packet Gourmet has a really cool website. You go in there, and you start your order. And at the end, when you want to check out, they have a line in there that says, "Are you in a hurry?" And they'll expedite your order.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
if you're on the trail or if your hike's coming up soon, you mean?
Yeah, or like you're ordering at the last minute.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
Like a lot of people do.
Yeah, exactly.
And we've gotten shit like practically overnight.
Wow.
And you get this, you can buy bulk vegetables and meats, and then you can make up your own meals.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and we've got some like these Lipton dinners, but then you add some of these Packet Gourmet vegetables and Packet Gourmet meats, like sausage and beef and chicken, and so you can bulk up the meals with some really lightweight stuff.
Yeah, were you doing that last year on the trip we went on?
Yeah,
I think I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I really like that, but you've got to be careful you don't buy too much, or you end up, once you open those packages, they start to go to hell.
Oh, okay.
Deteriorate.
Yep.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Well, when you're living on Capitol Hill, you don't want to have to be eating that kind of stuff for dinner. You got plenty of options there.
Right.
Was there, yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, with the property taxes up here, we might have to.
That's true.
Eat camp food.
maybe just the Lipton soup, huh?
Yeah.
Well, so I'm also going to put some links to the North 350 blades so people can connect to that and the PCTA. So I know that's a big passion of yours. And
It's always
great to give back. And I know you do a ton of work, so that's great.
Yeah.
Is there anything that I didn't bring up that you wanted to talk about?
Well, I could give a little. The other thing I do when I'm not doing PCTA trail work is I do stuff with Washington Trails.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if you're still doing that or not.
Yeah, I do. I've been going out one day a week, and I think I'm becoming a difficult volunteer because I complain. But I go out one day a week. It's this very not sexy stuff out in Issaquah, building, mountain bike trails.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it's like, that's what they get paid to do, that stuff. So, and I go out with, there's three or four guys and we try to make sure we go on the same trips, and we go out and we can, yak all day long and complain about things and get out of the house and get some exercise.
That's fun. Well, one thing I noticed about the PCTA is the amount of training they put in to everybody. Literally, everybody seems to be learning. I've learned so much since I joined the PCTA, and it's all free and stuff. So do you find yourself out there on these WTA trips kind of knowing more than some people then?
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah. And then the other thing in sort of defense of like I've learned to, with Washington Trails, I don't get around where they sawing logs. In fact, I've given up my certification. And then I don't do anything that has to do with structures. Because what happens is there's all these people that are experts. And they have opinions about how something that should be done. And if you're doing it, you get all this advice that I don't necessarily want.
No.
And so if you just stick with digging in the dirt, people pretty much leave you alone. Although then there's the experts about that too. And it harkens back to, there's a guy named Mike Dawson that's the head of all the maintenance on the PCT.
Oh yeah, I met him last year.
Yeah, you met him probably. But when he talks to a group about trail maintenance, he pretty much starts off with, you know, folks, there's probably 10 or 12 different ways to get the same result. And none of them are necessarily better than the other.
Yeah, he said that at the group we were in too.
Yeah, and I think it's good advice. It's good advice. And so anyway, so sometimes I have to bite my tongue.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the time of the podcast that we ask our guests some questions. They don't know these questions. They've never heard them before. So let's see what they have to answer. But first, let's talk about Cascade Hiker hats and bumper stickers. Go to CascadeHikerPodcast.com. Check out the hats and bumper stickers. Support the podcast. You can also donate. There's a donate button on each of our show notes. Go there, find pictures of our guests. Now enjoy the rest of the show. All right, so here's the first question then. What piece of gear do you consider not replaceable? It doesn't even have to be one you have now, maybe something that you just couldn't throw away over the years or something that you just love out on the trail.
I would almost say fingernail clippers.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, because hangnails and all that kind of stuff that you can't get with a knife. And they start gnawing on them, they get worse. Yeah. So how's that?
Yeah, well, plus, you know, whatever you put in your mouth, you know, it's going,
yeah,
never a good thing either. But that's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. Do you ever take alcohol or marijuana on the trail?
I've never taken marijuana. I've been presented with some from time to time, which is fine. And we carry... When we carry alcohol, we carry Wild Turkey because it's 100 proof.
Yeah.
And so it's more kick for the ounce. And we've actually carried, my wife and I have carried 151 proof rum when we go on some, sometimes we go out to the coast in the wintertime. And, but 151 proof, other than having a big alcohol count, it doesn't taste very good.
No.
No. No,
it's probably just about as good as the stuff you use in your stove.
Yeah. 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 And then I don't ever carry any, when I'm doing one of these longer trips, I don't carry any alcohol.
Right.
Just, it's not worth it.
Well, this one, a couple of these questions, and then the one, you know, where you talked about the fire before, a lot of times this is, you know, people are, they think, oh, you know, you see all these kids or younger adults and they, oh, how could you go hiking without alcohol or in a fire or, you know, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think, you know, it's definitely something. I personally don't do it a lot unless we're group camping or base camping type thing. So,
yeah,
just kind of curious where everybody's at with that one. What about bear spray or a firearm? Have you ever hiked with anything like that?
I've never used bear spray, never carried any. I've watched a demonstration of once in Yellowstone Park where some ranger was showing some Japanese tourists. It was pretty funny, really. And in a parking lot, and you know, they, because these people were going to go on this hike, and the guy was demonstrating how to use it.
This one you're up in Alaska, yeah. You say?
No, in Yellowstone Park.
Oh, Yellowstone, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, a couple summers ago, and that was pretty bizarre. And I've never, other than going on a hunting trip in Alaska, I've never carried a gun.
Yep. Well, this falls under that same category of, you know, some people think, yeah, how could you go out there without that? But
yeah, it's easy.
Turns out, yeah. I actually had some on our trip that we went on last summer. As I was leaving
the house.
No, I'm sorry, bear spray. as we were leaving.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah, I was getting packed up. My daughter had, I told this in another podcast, but she had made me buy some for when me and her go out. And and she said, well, Papa, you got to bring some with you. You know, you're going to be out there for a long time.
Yeah.
I couldn't let her down. I had to pack it. So,
yeah.
What about trekking poles?
I use them. About 10 years ago, I started using them, and I really like them.
Yeah.
And then as I've gotten older, they're particularly good because every so often I'll actually stumble and they keep you from falling down.
Yeah, that happens. Yeah. It's kind of a conundrum when you're doing trail work though, because you obviously no hands for that, but.
Right. Yeah. But no, I like them a lot.
That's great. What type of socks and footwear do you hike in?
I've been wearing Brooks trail running shoes, Brooks Addictions.
That's what I have.
And I would have used Brooks Cascadias, except they only go to size 15, and that's not big enough. So I use that, and then I use some ankle high socks.
And are they like a heavy wool or a light wool or?
They're actually one of these hot wool synthetic sock.
Okay.
And they're some REI brand. I've got some on right now that I bought in 2011 that they don't seem to want to wear out.
No, they're good. What about your shoes? Do they wear out?
Super Jock and Jill at Green Lake in Seattle.
Right.
And though that's a really good store. It's a running shoe store. And we ended up buying 9 pairs of shoes. There's 4 for Donna and 5 for me. And we got a 20% discount. They gave us a free pair of shoes.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It was pretty cool.
And you bought all size 16?
Yep.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Do you have a hiking book that you refer to people, or what's your favorite hiking book? And I'm not talking about your trail guide type stuff. Do you ever read any nonfiction stuff, like true stories about?
True stories. Oh yeah, yeah. I'm fascinated by the book Roots and Rocks.
Oh yeah,
yeah. And I actually had an original copy of it that was my brother's, and he died. So I ended up with this thing, and I just recently gave it to my nephew. But it has all those guys' the original maps, the quadrangle maps that show these routes. Many of them are up around Peak.
Is this the same hike here, like the hikes you're talking about that you did a couple times up there by Black Creek, was it? Or Chocolate Creek?
Yeah, yeah, it's things like that. And there's all these different high routes in there that I never got around to doing any of them, but it was fascinating to think these guys went out and created these things, whereas now, you know, people want to go somewhere and they look online or find a book.
Well, like you said, they got the GPS wrapped around their neck.
These guys went there and wrote the book.
Man.
And I'm fascinated.
I actually got that for Christmas this year.
That book?
Yeah, they found one on Amazon that was used.
Yeah. Yeah. So apparently the whole book's online. You know, you can read it online.
Well, that's not as cool.
Yeah. But anyways, they're pretty valuable.
Yeah.
The early copies of that.
I think the one I got was selling on Amazon for like $30. Uh-huh. But it wasn't it's not in tip top shape or anything, but
yeah. Yeah. Does it have the maps?
Yeah, it's the book. I think it's like a second or third edition, though. It's not it's not the original.
Yeah, because the original had these maps folded up inside the cover.
Okay, yeah, it's not that one. I'll have to look at it again. I haven't had time to really check it out. Been busy recording podcasts.
Yeah. Okay. there's a book by H.R. Tillman.
Uh-huh.
And he was a old time guy or a very early guy wandering around climbing mountains in the Himalayas, whatever they are. and he talked about these treks in there and putting together these big expeditions. And hauling crap in there where there was sort of no trails and they're sort of guessing where the best way up the mountain is. And it was a really interesting book. And
I feel like I've heard that name before. So
yeah, H.R. Tillman.
Nice.
And he actually died crossing the, or disappeared. He was an old man, I think. And he tried crossing from, I think it was from the tip of South America to Africa or something, and disappeared out there in like a rowboat.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he was just going to go away. He was checking out.
Yeah.
But that was, and then there's a guy named Stimson. I think it's Stimson, who writes a book called The Game of Ghosts. It's some mountain climbing tales. And these guys did some pretty weird stuff.
That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, those are a couple of good books, yeah. Sir. I'll try to find those and put them on the show notes too.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you could choose one person to hike with, whether they're live or not, who would you choose and why?
One person to hike with. Wow. Do I get in trouble if I don't say my wife?
No.
You know what I've actually found? My favorite companion is myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Solo.
I like solo.
That's good.
Pretty well. You get up in the morning and you get ready to go and you go.
That's good.
I'm gonna stop now.
Exactly.
And I'm gonna go over there and I really enjoyed that.
You win a lot of arguments that way?
Yeah, I get it. I'm in charge. But then it's also strange because you can go for quite a time without ever talking to anybody.
Right.
And then so it's sort of strange when you have to talk to somebody.
I think there's some people that don't even really understand what that means.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah.
All right. Last question. Do you listen to any hiking podcasts?
No. I don't. You know what? I don't. Just to be fair, I don't think I've ever listened to a podcast of anything.
All right. Well, do you How's think that? Maybe you'll listen to this one?
Yeah, well, I should. Yeah. So where am I going to be able to hear it?
I'll put them online.
Yeah.
You'll
podcasts just appear online on like your little site?
Yeah, I'll have a link to it and everything I'll send
you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. No, I don't think I've ever listened to one.
Okay, cool.
On anything.
It's never too late. Well, hey, right. Mr. Jim, right. Bigfoot Jim Miller, thanks for coming on the Cascade Hiker podcast.
Yeah. Okay. It's been fun. Yeah. See you out on the trail.
Hey, thanks so much for listening to the show. Go on back to CascadeHikerPodcast.com and, leave me a comment. Tell me what you thought. That's how I know everything's going good or maybe some things are going bad. But maybe you have some ideas there. And if you have some more questions for any of our guests, leave a comment under their episode and maybe we can get them back on and answer some quick questions there. You can send me an email if you don't want to leave a comment. It's ibighiker@gmail, ibighiker@gmail. Give my Facebook page a like, North Cascade Hiker. Follow me on Twitter @N_CascadeHiking. That's @N_CascadeHiking. I try to give you guys multiple ways to get a hold of me. Give me some comments on the show and maybe some ideas for some guests. Thanks again for listening to the show. Here's a little bit more of that Whiskey Fever track, Tall Grass.
You were sweet like honey on a heartbeat. You were fine like wine in the sunshine. I could feel you coming on strong. Could never be wrong, could never be wrong. See her laying down in the tall grass, playing mandolin in a white dress. I come running when I hear that song. It could never be wrong, it could never be wrong. Where you wanna run, baby, I'll run too. I would leave.